You are listening to Free Radio Olympia. Here at the Thunderbolt, I tend to cover a lot of controversial topics from controversial points of view. And therefore, some of the other folks that work with this radio station always appreciate it when I point out that while they may agree with the views expressed on this program, they also very well may not. And in either case, they are in no way responsible for that content. Therefore, if my show makes you want to start hurling blunt objects at people, then make sure you choose the correct target, which in this case would be me, not them. And now, on with the show! Guess, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day, you turned on your radio, and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee!
And now, on behalf of myself and our strict no-refund policy, we are pleased to present for your viewing pleasure.
Welcome to the Thunderbolt for November 1st, 2019. This week's show is called Symbiotic Adventures in the Land of the Anti-Olympia. Enjoy. Dateline. September 19th, 2019. Reporting from Mary Grove College in Detroit, Michigan. Part 1. The Quest for Coffee. Yes, it is 5:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and your intrepid reporter awakens from a deep sleep inside a full-size Crown Coach school bus. It is parked on the campus of Mary Grove College near downtown Detroit. Now, the beautiful and spacious campus at Mary Grove College has a park-like atmosphere consisting largely of vast swaths of lawn grass interspersed with a wide variety of hardwood trees. The buildings on the campus are huge and imposing, turn-of-the-century stone edifices in the ornate style of the time. And, since this is a Catholic school, religious iconography is prominently displayed inside the large and spacious buildings. Ornate street lamps, light landscaped driveways. Yes, kids, being at Mary Grove College is kind of like hanging out inside of a postcard. In my personal, if highly limited, experience, the biggest danger facing people on the campus of Mary Grove College is the distinct possibility that you may be hit on the head by a falling acorn. While it proved to be a slightly painful and somewhat unpleasant experience, it was hardly death-defying. So anyway, upon awakening in the Crown Coach school bus on the campus of Mary Grove College, your hero immediately embarks upon the same endeavor as he invariably and without fail performs first thing every morning. Yes, with obsessive, compulsive determination, he sets out upon his daily quest for coffee. Now, on the rare occasions that some obstacle appears and unexpectedly thwarts my quest, well, when facing such odious and inhumane conditions of extreme duress as that, I have been known to begin expressing a large number and a wide variety of highly negative worldviews at very loud volume. And so, after decades of having survived daunting challenges in a variety of contexts, your reporter has learned from hard experience to assure that preparations are completed the night before in order to reassure that the next morning's quest will end with the optimal outcome and with as few pitfalls or impediments to successful completion as possible. And this instance was no exception. Upon our arrival at Mary Grove College the previous day, your hero had already noted the 24-hour Marathon gas station and convenience store operating directly across the street from Mary Grove College. And thus he knew that he could almost certainly easily negotiate the early morning vicissitudes of even this very strange place and end up with a cup of hot coffee safely and securely wrapped within the firm grasp of both hands before having to deal with too many other aspects of the world at large beforehand. And thus, I left the protected and gated campus of Mary Grove College. And then, like some dark, malevolent magic spell had suddenly been cast, the physical reality of my surroundings instantly transformed from an idyllic wonderland into what appeared to be a set from some post-apocalyptic movie. Literally, right across the street, surrounding Mary Grove College for miles in every direction, the dominant feature of the cityscape is abandoned, boarded up, and decaying buildings in various states of decomposition, interspersed with vacant lots that probably previously contained buildings that had long ago been demolished. A typical city block in the areas surrounding downtown Detroit that I saw will often have a row of abandoned homes, with maybe one or two still occupied, or maybe not, and maybe a small business or two, or maybe not. While on nearly every block, there are also representative examples of the only institution that seems to be thriving in this milieu, i.e. churches. Yes, there are lots and lots of churches in Detroit. I had no idea the Palestinian Baptists were even a thing. But evidently, there are enough Palestinian Baptists in Detroit to warrant their very own church. There almost seem to be more churches in Detroit than there were inhabited homes. And thus, the instant I leave the campus of Mary Grove College, I face a row of abandoned buildings right across McNichols Street. With only a, quote, car wash, unquote, and a daycare center that are still in operation. And I place the car wash in quotation because I suspect that this, quote, car wash, unquote, was actually something else. As there were always lots of people hanging out and lots of people coming and going, and yet I never saw any cars actually being washed. But right there, on the corner of McNichols and Wyoming Streets, in the distance, I can see the object of my current interest lit up with bright lights specifically designed to invite and lure in those who are experiencing need. Yes, that Marathon gas station and convenience store with its 24-hour coffee pot. And thus, I proceed past the abandoned boarded-up buildings, past the, quote, car wash, unquote, and past the daycare center to the gas station, where I purchase a cup of coffee from a gentleman who is sitting behind a very thick layer of bulletproof glass, which is a feature in all the businesses in this neighborhood, including even the fast food restaurants. Then, upon successful completion of my quest, I decide that rather than walking all the way back with a full cup of coffee in my hands, I would instead hang out in front of the store and get a feel for the neighborhood as I drank my coffee. Now, this is a very busy gas station, even at this early hour, and one thing I soon noticed was that in the 20 minutes or so that I hung out there, I was the only white person that I saw. In addition, numerous people gave me curious looks, obviously wondering what the hell I was doing there. And indeed, a few minutes later, I overheard a young gentleman ask the cashier, "What the hell is that white boy doing hanging out in front of your store?" Then shortly thereafter, the young man evidently decided to investigate the question for himself and thus approached me and asked if I had a cigarette. And I said, "Sure, man, come on over." He approached very slowly. He was obviously hyper alert and fully ready for whatever. As he approached, he was closely scrutinizing me up and down, and he even more closely scrutinized the day pack that was sitting on the walkway next to me. And then he stopped 5 feet away. Since he obviously did not want to come any closer, I tossed the cigarette to him through the air, and he very adeptly caught it. I decided to immediately ease his mind, and so I explained that I was attending a conference across the street and that they didn't have any coffee over there yet. Now, upon learning this, the young man visibly relaxed. The white boy did indeed have a non-threatening reason to be hanging out in front of the store after all. I mentioned that I was from a town that was almost pure white, and that I found being the only white guy around to be an interesting experience. His response was, "Yeah, you must be. However, don't worry. Even when I'm the only white guy around, my white privilege is still extant. For me, being treated with deep suspicion due solely to my race was an interesting and unusual anomaly. For this young man, it is a constant, never-ending, death-defying thing that is in his face every time he tries to go out in public." Part 2. In the land of the anti-Detroit. So anyway, I was in Detroit because I attended the Symbiosis Conference, and whilst there, I picked up a few new listeners. So for the sake of my new listeners, please allow me now to briefly describe my adopted hometown of Olympia, Washington. It is a small town. Population, 50,000. But since it is the state capital, and since it is the home of one of the finest liberal arts colleges in the world, in the form of the Evergreen State College, this means there are cultural, political, and social scenes that are way out of proportion to Olympia's small size. And in fact, it's almost like we get the best parts of a much larger city without having to deal with the traffic or with the deep crazy around every corner. Another thing about Olympia is that it is 97% white. And to make matters even worse, most of these white people are privileged liberals who vote for Democrats. Now, while that may seem idyllic to some of my new out-of-town listeners from less progressive areas of the country, dealing with privileged white liberals carries challenges of its own. However, I will also say this about Olympia. I have been all over North America literally more times than I can count, and I could live anywhere that I wanted to live. And I chose to settle down here in Olympia. And as far as comparisons betwixt Olympia and Detroit go, voting for Democrats is about as far as it goes. And that fact in itself says a lot of not good things. Otherwise, Olympia and Detroit are almost as completely the opposite from each other as it is possible to imagine. For example, Detroit is full of vacant lots everywhere, often surrounded by what could be accurately described as ruins. Whereas every available lot of empty land in Olympia has some land developer salivating over it, wanting to construct yet another high-end townhouse and or some too expensive condos for all of the privileged white liberals who want to join us in our wonderful little Olympia bubble world. And now, all of the artists and the activists and many of the other people who are responsible for making Olympia into such a cool town are now being driven out of town by gentrification. And meanwhile, a tent city that literally takes up an entire city block sits right across the street from the downtown transit center, and scores of smaller tent
camp pop up like mushrooms everywhere that the land developers have not yet developed. And since Olympia is so liberal, then rather than jailing all the homeless people, Olympia takes a more enlightened approach. And they instead simply try to hide all of the houseless people and sweep them under the rug so that no one can see them. Liberals find it embarrassing to leave their nice warm townhouses in the morning only to be confronted by people living in tents or worse. They would rather not see that. Thus, there is an opaque fence completely surrounding the big officially sanctioned tent camp downtown. So it's right there, but it's invisible. A typical example of this mindset was when our city manager commented that it makes people uncomfortable when they have to step over people who are sleeping on a sidewalk. Well, here's an experiment you can try at home. Spend a night sleeping on a sidewalk and then try stepping over someone else who is sleeping on a sidewalk. And then tell us which experience makes you more uncomfortable. While a lot of local voters appreciated our city manager's concern for their well-being, I suspect that those voters did not include very many people who sleep on sidewalks. Part 3. On the bus and off the bus. So, for me, the trip to Detroit was basically a 10-day working vacation, helping Rick Fellows drive his Crown Coach to Detroit for the Symbiosis Revolution Congress. The bus was stuffed with what turned out to be 15 mostly young anarchists from Portland and Olympia. Oh yeah. As for the trip itself, every day I get the queue. That many people
to get on a bus that takes me to you.
Crammed into such a small moving space.
I'm so nervous I just sit and smile.
For so many hours on end.
The house is only another mile.
Worked out much better than most would have expected. On the return trip, we spent a night in a state park near Mandan, North Dakota, where I escaped the rain by squatting in a teepee. Now, the town of Mandan was named after the Indian tribe that used to live there before a bunch of white people killed all of them and stole all their land. And then they built a town up on their graves that they subsequently named after them. The brochure from the state park invited us to visit historic Fort Lincoln, which was on the grounds of the park, and to imagine what it would have been like to be a soldier here in the 1870s. We decided to pass on that experience. Since there weren't any Indians to kill and steal all their stuff, I decided the experience just wouldn't be the same anyway. We also tried to visit the Custer Battlefield, but learned that the National Park Service charges extortion-level entrance fees and that they were closed anyway. But I suspect that the brochures at the Custer Battlefield did not invite visitors to imagine what it was like to be a soldier in the 1870s at the Little Bighorn River. as the Little Bighorn River was a far less pleasant place to be for a soldier than Fort Lincoln had been. And whilst traveling on the magic bus, I also again noted the differences between eastern and western Montana. For in the west, the valleys are so wide and the mountains are so tall that it is not unusual for the horizon to be well over 100 miles away in every direction. Big sky indeed. But when you reach the plains, on the other hand, an area of the country that I have dubbed the Pancake Lands, then suddenly your horizon is almost exactly 2 miles in every direction. And as you travel, one seems to stay within that same 2 mile radius circle nearly forever. So we'll be back with more about the symbiosis revolution after a quick station break. See you in a minute. The views expressed on the Thunderbolt are my views, and no one else's. Those views do not necessarily reflect the views of any of the stations that air the Thunderbolt, nor anybody that has anything to do with any of those stations. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. All right, welcome back. So as to the Symbiosis Revolution Congress itself, while I fully intended to report on the conference, it should also be noted that journalism was not my primary interest in attending. I was there first as a participant. Therefore, though I did identify myself as a journalist a few times, and while I am going to quote a few of the participants here, I was not going around formally conducting interviews. So the first thing I'd like to say about the actual organizing of this event was that it was first rate. And I ate better at this conference than at any other such conference I have ever attended. So, kudos to the organizers. And I mention this because when I questioned two of the organizers, after noting that they were two of the people that had half-killed themselves to put this event on, I was curious as to whether or not they considered it to have been worth the effort. And neither one of them ever actually answered my question. And thus, I am also happy to report that the Symbiosis Congress turned out to be just what I was hoping it would be, i.e., the first step to creating a network for all of these tens of thousands of tiny little sequestered organizations that are doing God's work all over the country, yet doing it alone and isolated. Several such organizations sent representatives to the Symbiosis Congress, and I will be describing a few of them for the November 15th show. However, I consider the mere fact that such a network is actually now on the table made the Symbiosis Congress a success in and of itself. Yes, if everyone were to start networking with everyone else, then our influence and our capabilities would grow by several orders of magnitude. These folks over here have been doing this shite for years, and this is what worked for them, and this is what did not work for them, and here's what they have to share with you, and here's what they need from you. One early concern of mine when I joined the conference, though, was the distinct lack of a racial diversity. While there were several very notable exceptions, the vast bulk of the attendees at the Symbiosis Congress were privileged white radicals. And yes, I resemble that remark myself. Still, at the end, I personally considered the conference to have been a success, though it did not end up where it ended up without some rocky patches. On Friday, it appeared as if all the white radicals were about to begin their stereotypical habit of lining up for circular firing squads when, with perfect irony, a black woman stepped into the breach, took over the facilitation duties, and ended up saving the whole frigging conference from itself. We didn't actually sing Kumbaya in the end, but it would not have been completely inappropriate. When the conference adjourned, we had agreed on the things we agreed on and determined to continue debate remotely on the things we did not agree on. And now we had faces and personalities of people that we had actually met in person to put with all of those electronic exchanges. And that fact alone changes the entire dynamic of electronic communications. This thing might actually become a thing. And I'm very glad for that. Part 5. The Olympia Assembly Assembled. Those of you who actually listen to the Thunderbolt calendar every week probably remember hearing the Olympia Assembly often featured there. Now, I personally know most of the activists in town, but I had no idea of who made up the Olympia Assembly. I just knew they were doing good things and that I wanted to promote them. So it turns out the several members of the Olympia Assembly loaded onto Rick's bus for the trip to Detroit. During the trip, it was very good to hear young folks going on for hours in endless detail about the new world that they want to create for themselves. And to that end, these kids spent a whole bunch of time, energy, and love to author a lengthy document they called Points of Unity, wherein they tried to codify the things that unified everyone involved with Symbiosis. Everybody's just like you, it's true. Everybody wants a good thing too. And they attempted to have their document adopted by Symbiosis as the official Points of Unity. And while I greatly appreciated their effort, I also knew that if these kids presented such a document of that length and with that many details to a crowd like this one, then they were going to have their document ripped to shreds right in front of their faces. I had a few problems with it myself, for that matter. So as I listened to the Ole Assembly kids talking on the bus, I found myself curious as to how they were going to react to having a bunch of people pan and nitpick their work over the rocks. And I found myself curious as to how they would react to that. And to their credit, while they expressed extreme disappointment, they ultimately accepted the consensus of the group with grace nonetheless. Ultimately, in the big picture, I would have to say yes. It's a monumental good thing. Part 6. Points of Disunity. So one thing about that Points of Unity document that those OA kids produced, I am convinced that we need to start seriously targeting people who do not already agree with us. And in order to communicate with people, you need to go where they are. And the more published points of unity we have, then the more people we will cut off. There are three people in Olympia who will not speak to me. And they pretend that they do not see me whenever we encounter each other in public simply because I am against gun control laws. Now I have about 17 or 23 very good reasons for my opposition to gun control laws. And I am ready to debate that issue at any time. But the point I'm making here is that all of these three people who won't talk to me, I probably agree with them on 95% of all other issues. But since I disagree with them on that one single issue, they have designated me as the enemy. If you are going to refuse to work with anyone unless they 100% agree with you on every single issue, then you don't want a society. What you want is a cult. If we're gonna actually get anything done, we need to get a large portion of the general public on our side. And saying things like, "We agree that capitalism is a kleptocracy that enables psychopaths," well, that is indeed exactly what capitalism is. And I regularly describe it as such on this show, often using rhetoric that is even harsher than that. But there are ways that you can convey that back in language that is not going to freak out some regular Joe who has been brainwashed for three generations to think that capitalism is just the cat's meow. Yes, kids, we need to educate people, not isolate or condemn them because they were miseducated. And that's all we have time for this week. For the November 15th show, we will be covering several of the organizations that attended the Symbiosis Revolution Congress, as well as an insane art project that sits amidst the ruins of Detroit. Until then, though, it's time to get to work. And thus ends part one of the Thunderbolt, Why You Should Be Upset. Next comes part two, What Can Be Done About It? Across Cascadia, the masses are arising in response to
the Olympia Action Alert
for the week of November 1st through November 7th, 2019. All right, it's time for the calendar. First event is later today, Saturday, November 2nd. It's a public workshop, Homeless Response Strategies. This will be from 9 to 11:30 a.m. at Capitol High School, 2707 Conger Avenue, Northwest. This event is being hosted by the City of Olympia government, and somebody probably needs to keep tabs on what they're up to. I'm going to try to make this event myself. And this event was organized by the City of Olympia. And this is their message. In March 2019, a community work group was formed to develop a long-term homeless response plan for Olympia. So far, we have heard from over 700 community members and stakeholders through workshops, focus groups, listening sessions, online surveys, and community conversations. Based upon that input, the work group is now identifying draft strategies for addressing homelessness in our community. The public is invited to come and provide feedback during this critical phase at either of two workshops. Be sure to bring a smartphone so you can participate in our interactive polling activity. Which, an aside here, I guess you're SOL if you don't have a smartphone, but whatever. So anyway, this is, the public workshop on homeless response strategies, Saturday, November 2nd, 9 to 11:30 a.m. at Capitol High School, 2707 Conger Avenue, Northwest. Also today, Saturday, November 2nd, we have an IWW orientation. This will be from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Olympia Center, 222 Columbia Street, Northwest. This event was organized by the Olympia Industrial Workers of the World, and this is their message. Join us as we learn about the IWW, from its history to its tactics and structure. If you have any questions, please contact organize@olympiaiww.com. So again, this is an IWW orientation. Saturday, November 2nd, from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Olympia Center, 222 Columbia Street, Northwest. All right. So next on the agenda is Sunday, November 3rd. It's the Fall 2019 General Assembly. This will be from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Mix 96 Meeting Room. That's at 119 Washington Street, Northeast. This event was organized by the Olympia Assembly, and this is their message. You are invited to the Olympia Assembly's upcoming General Assembly on November 3rd at 4 p.m. at Mix 96. Prior to the meeting, there will be a potluck that starts at 3 p.m. The Olympia Assembly is a libertarian socialist organization connecting people from a variety of backgrounds and political perspectives around the principles of participatory democracy, direct action, collective liberation and solidarity, cooperative economics and mutual aid, and ecological stewardship. We seek to advance a platform to transform our city, region, and then the world along horizontal and cooperative lines, and to provide a practical and revolutionary structure for non-ruling class people to resist systems of domination and hierarchy. Our general assemblies occur 4 times per year and are a place for community members and radicals to come together to discuss the essential social, political, and economic issues pertinent to the community at large, and to brainstorm radical direct action and mutual aid-based solutions to them.
The discussions at these general assemblies helped to determine the focus of the Olympia Assembly as an organization for the next several months. I do not have any contact information other than a Facebook event. So again, this is the Fall 2019 General Assembly, Sunday, November 3rd, 4 to 6 p.m. at the Mix 96 Meeting Room, 119 Washington Street, Northeast. Also on Sunday, November 3rd, we have the Situation in Rojava. This will be from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at 115 Legion Way Northwest. And this is actually one of two events happening this week on Sunday and Monday that update the situation in Rojava, and this is important stuff. This first event was organized by 115 Legion, and this is their message. The Emergency Committee for Rojava is pleased to present a report by journalist and author Debbie Bookchin, who has recently returned from the autonomous Kurdish-led region known as Rojava. She will talk about why it is critical to defend this feminist ecological democratic project from the ongoing onslaught by Turkey and its jihadi allies, as well as the Syrian regime, and how ideas of social ecology have influenced the Kurdish freedom movement. This report is part of the speaking tour that ECR envisions as a step toward building a nationwide network to support Rojava and the Kurdish movement at a time when they are in grave danger. No contact information. It's a Facebook event. So again, this is the Situation in Rojava, Sunday, November 3rd, 7:30 to 9 p.m. at 115 Legion Way Northwest. And then on Monday night, November 4th, if you missed the Sunday event, there is another event with Debbie Bookchin about Rojava out at the Evergreen State College. This will be from 3 to 5 p.m. at the First Hall, Lecture Hall 1. And the Evergreen College address is 2700 Evergreen Parkway Northwest. This event was organized by the Black Cottonwood Collective, but they have the same message as the 115 Legion people did, so I'm not going to read it again. So this is, again, the Situation in Rojava, a conversation with Debbie Bookchin, Monday, November 4th, from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Evergreen State College, Purse Hall, Lecture Hall 1, 2700 Evergreen Parkway, Northwest. Also on Monday, November 4th, there's a voter roundtable power outage. This will be from 5:30 to 8 p.m. at the Power Office, 309 Fifth Avenue Southeast. And Power stands for Parents Organizing for Welfare and Economic Rights. This event was organized by Power, and this is their message. All are welcome at our voter roundtable. Bring your ballot and voter guide and any info on the candidates' issues that you can share. It is a discussion, not a debate, in order to share information to help individuals to decide how they want to vote. There is an optional potluck and child care is provided. For information, you can go to mamapower.org. So again, this is a voter roundtable power outage, Monday, November 4th, from 5:30 to 8 p.m. at the Power Office, 309 Fifth Avenue Southeast. Next, we go to Wednesday, November 6th. It's Washington's Undiscovered Feminists. This will be from quarter after 10 till 11:45 a.m. at the Olympia Center, 222 Columbia Street Northwest. This event was organized by Humanities Washington, and this is their message. In commemoration of the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage, we will remember some of the remarkable but often unsung women of the Pacific Northwest. Writer Mayumi Sutakawa presents five women warriors in the arts and journalism whose inspiring stories reach back to the early years of our region. This event is sponsored by Humanity Washington's Speakers Bureau program. You can find out more about our free public events across Washington State at humanities.org. So again, this is Washington's Undiscovered Feminists, Wednesday, November 6th, from 10:15 to 11:45 a.m. at the Olympia Center, 222 Columbia Street Northwest. And finally, on Wednesday, November 6th, it's Olympia Green Drinks with Wolfhaven at Dirty Dave's Pizza Parlor. This will be from 5 to 7 p.m. at Dirty Dave's Pizza Parlor, 3939 Martin Way East. This event was organized by Olympia Green Drinks, and this is their message. Come and learn about the work of Wolf Haven, our local, nationally recognized wolf sanctuary. And aside, I am familiar with their work, and they're doing good things out there, too. So, yeah, this is cool. Back to their message. We'll be in room 2. After you enter Dirty Dave's, turn left, and then there will be a labeled room on your left. You can bring any announcements you may want to share with the group, and we will share them at 6 p.m. Green Drinks is a no-host networking meetup for people interested in the environment. Feel free to drop in and bring friends. It's a casual way to meet others who share your environmental interests or can help you learn about new ones. And you can find more information about Wolf Haven's work at wolfhaven.org. So again, this is Olympia Green Drinks with Wolf Haven, Wednesday, November 6th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Dirty Dave's Pizza Parlor, 3939 Martin Way East. And that's it for the calendar. And for Chaos and Rainier Avenue radio listeners, that's it for the Thunderbolt this week. I'll be back next week. I would like to take the few seconds I have left here to encourage you to donate to your favorite public radio station, because they're the only ones putting out the real deal. So see you next week and have a good time. Peace. The Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. Neither the stations that air the Thunderbolt, their sponsors, their members, their underwriters, nor anyone else that has much to do with anything else in any way, is responsible for the content of the Thunderbolt. Nor do they necessarily agree with the views expressed on the Thunderbolt. If you have any comments, or if you wish to express an opposing opinion, you should send an email to dana98501@gmail.com. And we will make arrangements. And I hope that you have a day. And a quick note here. The Thunderbolt is on Facebook, where you can find links to the show and to the show notes. Or you can go to radioforall.net. That's radio4all.net. Where you can also find the show notes, as well as a year's worth of downloadable episodes of the Thunderbolt.
Thank you very much.